You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and today we are covering a few different things. PNC Championship, a little more on the framework getting closer to maybe a final deal between the PGA Tour and some investing suitors. To help me break it all down, Patrick McDonald is here, and Patrick McDonald is on the road. Hello, Patrick. Oh, we've got you either on mute. Wow. Tough.
Am I unmuted? I think Josh did that on purpose. I think he felt slighted.
Bogey. Went over after one.
Tough scene. Mark Immelman is here. Mark, good to see you again, Mark.
Hey, boys. I got my festive on. Happy festive season to all of you. Good to be with you.
Yes, if you are just listening and not watching on YouTube, Mark Immelman is wearing a red Santa hat with a jingle bell at the end, and also red, green, and white. What would you call those?
Pom-poms, I guess. Jingle pom-poms. All the way.
Yeah. Pom-poms. Yes, that's a very good term. KP is here, not nearly as festive, but seems like he's ready to go.
Who's the most likely PGA Tour player to wear to play in that hat?
Patrick Cantlay,
Scotty Scheffler, Hovland. No, Hovland would be up for it. I think Victor would do it.
Yeah. He wears a lot worse than that.
That's not nice.
And also true.
Yeah, that's not a bad one. There's got to be some fun-loving Tony Finau would wear that hat.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good one.
Fun-loving family man. Somebody like that would wear.
Harry
that.
Higgs would wear two of them.
Harry Higgs would wear two and no shirt.
Yeah.
I just wish now he's going to keep the shirt buttoned up and then he can wear that.
He was in the, we'll jump ahead. We'll save that for was a little bit.
Was he at Q School?
Yeah.
Yeah. No dice.
Didn't. No dice. Does he have Corn Ferry status? He's got to, right?
I think he has to have some level of Corn Ferry status.
Yeah. I think he was like one. He might have conditional on the PGA Tour.
I think
like
that's
that.
Right.
Yeah.
I was dialed into Q School today. It was fun.
So good, man. Well, and they did not play yesterday, which if you're listening to this, that was Sunday. So as if the nerves weren't bad enough, now you got to sleep on it on an extra day.
Oh, I mean, and these guys, like, they look so placid and calm. Like guys that have never, you know, it's one thing if you've been out there on tour or some, but guys that had never been anywhere, like Blaine Hale, kid from, went to OU. I think he's from Dallas. Just, you know, just strolling around like it's no big deal and earns his PGA Tour card today. It was crazy.
These guys are good. And hey, just act like it's not a big deal and you'll kind of convince yourself of it.
That doesn't work for me, Rick.
It doesn't work for me either. You know what actually does work for me? So this is the psychology that I use, especially when I'm over a shot. And Mark, I'd love your thoughts on this as well. I don't know if you'd ever teach this. Is I know I'm going to be nervous or I'm going to feel uncomfortable or whatever, but I tell myself, you know, if you don't hit a committed shot right now, if you don't commit to this, you'll actually just regret not being committed, right? So I just want to, I don't care what the outcome is, but if I do something uncommitted, I'm actually going to be more upset about that.
That's a great way to look at it. Well, one of the best lessons I got was from a Bernard Langer. You've heard of him.
In fact,
he and his son were pretty good last weekend. Bernard said to me, and sort of emotionless as you would imagine, he would be like, you know what? I'd rather hit the wrong club in a committed fashion than make the right decision at the right club and hit it uncommitted. And that's like a lesson in life, really, but certainly in golf, because if you make some sort of a convicted pass, like the word is always like make an aggressive swing towards a conservative target, as opposed to making a conservative swing to an aggressive target. Like Langer says, if you committed to your decision, you're likely to make a freer flowing swing, and you stack the odds in your favor. There's no guarantee, but you certainly put the odds in your favor if you do that.
Rick, I think I actually have the opposite problem as you. Like, I think I am too committed.
You're too committed to the task at hand.
I'm overcommitted. Yeah. I just like I'll go out on the range and just be jacking around, and everything's great. Like, there's no pressure. I don't feel anything. I'm hitting really good golf shots. And then I get to the first tee and it's like, I'm trying to just suffocate the club handle. Like, I'm just it's stupid because it still doesn't mean anything. I mean, it means more to me than the range, but it still is like, it's not like I'm playing to get in the US Open or something. I need to chill a little bit.
You got to take a leaf out of a man who grew up just down the way from where you live. He was pretty good. His name's Ben Hogan. And he was asked what the most important shot in golf was, and he said the next one. And if you can approach golf in that sort of a vein, now, Gary Player would say to me, he goes, hit every shot as if it's the last one you'll ever hit. So take on the information, pull the right club, make a convicted pass. But then swing it like Hogan said. This one doesn't really matter. Its value will be defined by the following one. I could hit a 300 down the fairway and make five. Or I could hit a 220 in the fairway and make four. You know, it's the next one that's going to define the value of the shot you're over. And if you can somehow adopt that mindset, you'll be able to swing more freely.
I usually hit it 280 down the other fairway and make six.
Well, the second one off the other fairway counts.
Speaking of the Langers, they got the job done at the PNC Championship, 60-59. Yeah, that'll generally do the trick. But Patrick, the lights, the cameras, the microphones were heavily tilted in favor of Team Woods, where the big cat and the kitten went 64-61 to finish T5.
Yeah, it was social media manager Super Bowl this weekend. I mean, truly. Engagement galore, farming out there like old McDonald himself. It was cool to see. They kind of had a little run there on Sunday, made a string of birdies there. There was a cool little moment in the bunker on 14 where Charlie hit this, you know, nifty little bunker shot right next to the pin, and then Tiger stepped up, almost outdid him. And it was cool. I think just the whole like conversation around Charlie Woods and the Woods. I know Nicholas's kid was on the cover of SI back in the day too. It's so bizarre to me. It really is. Like both sides, right? Like I said, I don't hate the player. I hate the game when it comes to the engagement farming. I understand social media managers, they got to do what they got to do. You know, they got to get the clicks. They got to get the views. I understand that. And then I saw one tweet this weekend and I had to make sure it wasn't like a parody account. I thought it was, you know, from a club pro guy or something like that, but it was a citizen. And he said, oh, I watched 14 year olds for the last decade. One, it sounded like this guy should be on a watch list or something. And he's like, why are we so obsessed with this kid? And it's like, I think, you know, I have more disdain for someone like that who looks up Charlie Wood's score and is like, oh, he's not even that good. Like let the kid enjoy his moment with his old man. You know, you don't need to, you can post a couple videos, sure. You don't need to post 100 of them. You don't need to criticize him. He's a freaking kid, for Christ's sake. So it's just all very bizarre to me. And I understand it because it's Tiger and it's Tiger's son. But yeah, they played great.
Two things real quick, Patrick. One, I had somebody, I tweeted that he drove the 321-yard green or whatever, and I had the numbers wrong, didn't do the math right. Sue me, whatever. Don't sue me. But somebody responded and said, That's not that impressive. Don't you know how far 14-year-olds hit it these days? And I was like, and he framed it like, I can't remember. It was like, as somebody who covers golf, I would think you know how far the like 14-year-olds hit it. And I was like, I don't. Like, that would be weird if I did. Yeah, I think
like you
that
do.
That would be very strange if I did. And then I think the other thing that is one of my takeaways from the week or the weekend was I think Tiger's done a lot of things wrong, right? I think that's, you know, his life sort of speaks to that. But I think one thing that is very commendable as a parent that he's done very well is to protect his kids from exactly what you're talking about. You know, he talked a lot about phone usage and how he's tried to like guide them and how he's tried to keep them from idiots like us. And it seems like such an innocuous thing, but I think it's actually very commendable because it would be, it takes some like real intentionality for him to do so. And so I wanted to say that. I think he's done a very good job of that.
Rick, if you're cool, I'd love to chime in on this. First off, did you see the TV rankings? NBC got a higher number for the PNC Championship than they did for the Open Championship. Okay. So that's testament to Tiger. I will say this to what you said, Patrick. Look, it seemed to me like it was the Charlie Woods show. When I switched the thing on, I was seeing more slow motions of Charlie's swing than I was of Tiger. And look, Charlie's impressive. Let's not beat around the bush. But to that guy that interacted with you, Kyle, I'm seeing kids that hit it 300 plus ad nauseum as teenagers now. This is just what they do. Now, look, I think Charlie has the upside as a player because you can see the Tiger mannerisms. And if I'm going to copy something from Tiger Woods, it would be like the way he approaches the game, zen-like steady is between the ropes, the way he can cut out the noise. And I think if Charlie is going to turn into a professional golfer one day, all of this wind that he's catching right now is standing him in really good stead because the spotlight's always going to be on the kid. It was the first time he played 3 years ago. And it's only going to intensify if he gets any better. Reality is, look, he's got a big upside, but he's still got a little going to go. So I'm with you. I appreciate Tiger for how he's parenting Charlie. I appreciate him for the things he's impressing upon Charlie. I'm more impressed with Tiger's daughter. I mean, she looks like she's got the world at her feet. So anyway, Tiger is doing a good job. As far as Charlie goes, there was a lot of him. I would have preferred to see some other golfers too, but I understand it is what it is because again, the TV rating number bore the whole thing out. Show Charlie and Tiger and you're getting the clicks and the views and stuff. And that's what drives the dollars, you know?
Definitely brings in the views and the clicks, especially in December, where golf usually slows down. Not so much this year. Patrick, looking at the big cat, he did not go as far. He would not commit to showing up at Torrey Pines at the end of January. He said a couple of weeks ago at the Hero World Challenge, in an ideal world, it'd be about one tournament per month. Are you more bullish or bearish on that statement now after seeing him play at the PNC Championship?
I absolutely love that Cara Banks just straight up asked him. So we'll see you at Torrey Pines, right, Tiger?
You promised us that.
I don't know, Jim. I mean, he walked the final day.
That was good, Patrick. That was good.
It was cold, kind of.
I don't know, Jim.
It was pretty miserable during the early stages there at the Ritz-Carlton. And he looked fine. His walk, I thought, looked better than it did in the Bahamas. So I don't know if he's going to play Torrey. I think the Genesis makes a lot of sense. Smaller field with the cut. He's going to get in. I thought what is interesting, I believe Bob Herrick was the first to bring it to light, is Tiger's not in the U.S. Open. And he was asked about it a lot, whether he'd accept the invitation like Jack and Arnie have. I know they had an invitation set for Phil before he won the PGA Championship. And you know, I don't think Tiger's going to ask for it, but the USGA is 100% going to give it to him if it comes to that. So, yeah, I think not more. I'm probably like still the same where I was after the Hero World Challenge. Six tournaments beginning in February through the Open Championship and he'll be good to go. I will say his iron play once again was not very sharp. I understand it's a scramble format and you don't get a lot of those like mid long iron ish shots. It's a lot of wedges and they're using Charlie's drives, but I think there's something like, you know, he touched on game speed a lot in the Bahamas. He's not up to game speed yet. And I think you see it with those mid to long irons where he might try to be shaping a ball from the middle of the green to a pin and it's not curving as much as he expects it to. And he might curve it enough at home, but it's not happening in competition. So that's really what I'm looking at in, you know, come February and March before the Masters.
Yeah, but he's still got the hands. I mean, that bunker shot you talked about, you described, that hit that thing in there, flighted with some spin, that speaks to a guy who knows exactly where the base of the golf swing arc is. And to the speed, the raw speed, I think there's plenty. I don't think, Patrick, I haven't seen him, so this is kind of my observations from afar. I don't think it has the trajectory in terms of the apex behind it that it was when he was at his very best, which is to be expected because he can't push off that much. But I was heartened by the way he was walking. Now, Rick, to Torrey Pines, 3 rounds around the South Course. That is brutal to walk there. It is a lot of golf course on Kikuyu grass. So, you know, if it gets a little cold there that time of the year, I'm not that sure we'll see Tiger at the end of January. I really am not.
Two items there, KP. So I'll take something that Patrick was just referring to in terms of the sharpness on some of those shots and combine it with something Tiger did say after one of his rounds at the Hero World Challenge. You know, a lot of these shots, whether it's holding something up against the wind, whether it's working it in a specific direction, whether it is flighting it at a particular trajectory, he mentioned how critical it is to do that like in competition rep. And to actually do that on the spot, not just do it at the driving range. And it's a lot of feel, and it's the feel that he hasn't gotten as of late. So that part makes sense to me. And then as far as the schedule goes, the 6th that I'm assuming Patrick is referring to is February Genesis, March Players, Masters in April, May the PGA, June the US Open, July the Open Championships. Does that sound about right?
I think that's right. I don't know what the point of playing Torrey would be, I guess. I think if you're going to play Torrey, then why wouldn't you just play Bay Hill and try to force more of your reps closer to the Masters, right? Because I don't know that Torrey is like the 7th on that list, I guess is what I'm saying. I would think it'd be...
The only thing that's with Torrey is I don't even care about the record. It's just the spread out nature of
I'm
with you.
You know, API, you'd have to go API then players, which he's not going to do that. It's just a couple weeks of cushion. But I agree. There's not a ton of upside, even if you throw out the record. I think it's just kind of the cadence of it.
I think you're right. Real quick, Mark, I think what's interesting, you know, because people are like, oh, he's going to win the Masters, he's going to win a major, all this stuff, which fine. Like, I could not disagree more. But I think if you look back at 2019, when he did win the Masters, he played, I want to say, Rick, 5 times, maybe 6 times leading into that Masters. Like, he played a lot. And he played pretty well, better than I think people thought. He was finishing like T20, T15, T25. Like he was playing good. He wasn't necessarily scoring, but there were some signs leading into that Masters of like, hey, Tiger Woods is playing good golf. And I just don't, I don't know, Mark. I don't know how he's going to even be able to play enough to show those signs to us or to himself that he can play good enough golf to have any realistic chance going into any of the majors.
You hit the nail on the head there, Kyle. Because he said as much after the final round at the PNC event. He goes, look, playing for money against my buds down in South Florida, it's not the same as playing even in the PNC Challenge, regular, let alone a PGA Tour event, let alone a major championship. So with that being said, he needs the reps under pressure. But yeah, we're discussing, is he going to play in Torrey? And we all, I guess, would agree that he's not going to. But then once again, the first time under pressure is in February. So he's gone this, well, I've had some pressure in late December. Now I'm going for a whole 30, 40 days again. So it's almost like you're recrafting, rebuilding the whole thing again. So it's kind of weird. So, I mean, I would love him to play some stage in January just to sort of keep that, okay, I know what it feels like thing, so you can build a little momentum into the bigger events. So, but I'm in complete agreement with you. I think the spread outness of the thing is going to be the challenge.
Maybe he'll go play the Saudi Arabia event.
yeah, I'm sure I'll do that. They or just Sony. Played in Saudi Arabia. The Asian tour plays in Saudi Arabia like three times a month.
I bet they do. 300 million will do that.
They just played there last week. The Saudi
for Open? Sure, yeah. For sure. Sony would be sick if Tiger showed up to YOI. That would be absolutely sick.
Could you imagine though? It's going to be warm. It's very flat golf.
Sure. Yeah, it's short.
Too. It would be awesome. I legitimately mean that. I think it would be very cool.
He should. The lead in to that 2019 Masters was, so he started at Torrey Pines with a T20, T15 at the Genesis, T10 at the WGC Workday. That was at Chapultepec, and then the Players T30, and then he won the Masters.
That's kind of how my dad pronounces Chipotle, Rick.
Oh, what? My dad said something the other day that I was like, that is, I can't, I was like, that is not even in the ballpark. That's yeah, on the same not- planet.
It's not like one syllable off. No, it's like five syllables off.
I'm like the only person who could translate that into what you actually meant it. I can't remember what.
Look at that. The worst, his worst score in those first, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4. His first four stroke play events was 72. That's crazy.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Really, really sorry. Impressive.
Yeah, yeah, 72 at the Players. Yeah.
Yeah, but you see there, there's at least an event a month leading into it. That's the thing for me.
Yeah, and that's where, Mark, I just don't know. I don't know. I mean, he looks great, right? Like he looks, I think three times as good as I thought he would look, as you know, people that are realistic about this I think thought he would look. But one, I just don't know that he can play enough, and two, you know, I think, And he's kind of been alluding to this, there's only so many swings in his back, honestly. Like, fuse the ankle, get the, like, the leg, even if the leg's fine, we keep forgetting about the fused spine, yeah. You know? And that's where it's like, okay, do you want to go to Torrey and be hacking out of there? Do you, like, how do you manage those swings over the next year, two, three, whatever it is, to just give yourself one sort of shot at maybe a last you know, contention at a major?
Yeah, well, I guess the strategy then is, and he won't intimate that, he'll sort of drop, you know, crumbs if to say, well, this is kind of the idea. The strategy is obviously then, well, if I want to win a Masters or a major, it's like I hope I catch lightning in a bottle kind of thing. Whereas on the other side of the thing, well, I'm not going to play every month and sort of get some more form running in. So I sort of see where he's going now that you say this. Well, like, I'm going to take January off. Maybe I can cobble something together, roll around April time, and it just happens for me, and I get myself into contention. I get a sniff of it all, and when Tiger, look, if he knows how to do something, he knows how to win. And when Tiger's on the leaderboard, he has one of those sort of presences about his name on the board where other folks kind of fall over in front of him. Like we saw at the 19 Masters.
Yeah, Poulter and Finau. And,
yeah, so maybe that's the approach. I'm just going to take January off, try and get well, and then we'll see what happens.
I think it has to be. I don't know if it'll work, but I think that I think that's probably the path forward.
Yeah.
Well, Tiger not only has golf on his desk. Do you think Tiger has a desk at home? I think he has a desk that he sits at. Gets work done, no. Signs papers.
No.
Yeah, I think it's like a glass top though, not like a rich mahogany like wooden.
He's got a desk, but it never gets used. My brother's always too. My brother's got the sweetest office you could ever imagine. He goes in there like once a year for a podcast appearance.
Yeah, I was gonna say I've seen it. I've seen his background on like three podcasts ever, but. It's always funny seeing like famous, rich, famous people's homes, like on Architecture Digest. You're like, you've never been in this room. You don't even know what's in here.
Yeah. And in this room is, as I'm opening the door, looking around. Oh, there's a bed in here.
Yeah.
That's where I like to decompress, you know, get away from the family.
Well, anyway, if Tiger does have things coming across his desk, it is because of the ongoing merger. Will they, won't they? We'll discuss that and much more. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And we're back. KP, before we jump into this, I finished listening to NS3.
Yeah.
And I was laughing out loud because about a week ago, I was trying to explain to Armina how Bryce Harper once pronounced the word meme.
Meme.
Meme. And I lost it when that made its little, it was in there. And I was like, oh my God, that's like, it's the greatest moment of my life. I think about it all the time.
I was just, as I was reading, I would either like just start laughing and just leave it in there, or I would say stuff that wasn't in the book because whatever, I can do it. It's my audiobook. And I thought when I was saying the word meme in there, I thought about the time, I think he was on SVP, right?
I thought it was in a locker room, like in the locker room after games. Like, oh, I don't know, but maybe I'm confusing that with, that's a clown question.
Yeah, you are. You're conflating clown question. I think he was on SVP and he said meme. He called it a meme, which is sort of the audio version of never having been in one of the rooms in your house.
Right.
And it was, like, I will never forget what that sounded like, because I've no, it's like Patrick's dad trying to pronounce Chipotle.
It was really confident. That's the thing. He's very confident in it.
Can we show that, producer Josh? If we can pull that up, that would be extraordinary, because right. it is the best.
Josh, if you ever get a handle on that, let me know. We'll throw to it. While we're talking about the Big Cat and some golf, the reports are coming out hot and heavy, and it's not just with the PIF, Patrick. The PIF, Patrick. Another acronym has made its way into the fray. Strategic Sports Group is reportedly prepared to invest $3 billion with a B into the PGA Tour. This is a group of U.S. sports owners, includes Arthur Blank, John Henry, amongst others. And it seems as if the PGA Tour wants to get, let's say, this $3 billion and another $3 billion or $2 billion or some billions from the PIF.
I'm thinking Big J leaked this story before his big meeting with Yasser.
I saw you float this in your newsletter. Acronym boy over there just throwing out some theories.
You postpone the meeting. Oh, we just happened to drop this on Friday with what we want from SSG. That's what the kids are calling the Strategic Sports Group. And now you have this meeting with Yasser. But, you know, I didn't really understand the numbers at first. My junior year finance professor, Professor Eastwood, no relation to Lee Westwood.
Eastwood or Westwood?
He's Eastwood, but he's not like an evil twin of Lee.
I thought
Westwood.
You were going to say no relation to Clint, but you said Lee.
Or Clint.
Okay. Actually,
or the Northwoods or the Southwoods.
In Hollywood.
Huh.
I don't know. Is there a Northwoods casino? Rick,
there's one in Connecticut called Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah. What is
Foxwoods.
That?
Foxwoods.
Foxwoods. Okay.
Who are the Northwoods?
Mm. I don't know.
Oh, okay. But so I was reading Joe Ogilvy. I don't know if you've heard of this guy, but
yeah,
he's a Duke grad. And you know that old saying where it's like, if a tree falls in a forest and no one's around, does it make a sound? That's kind of like Duke grads, I think. Like, if they don't tell anyone they went to Duke, did anyone actually go to Duke?
There we go.
Situation.
Hey.
But he went to Duke, and he's a very smart guy, member of the PGA Tour for a while. He's.
Do you know him, Mark?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Let's get him on. So,
hey, Patrick, he does pass the eye test. I can. Well,
What he tweeted out was valuable information, because it was not in any of the articles whether the valuation was pre or post money. And so
that's a Shark Tank phrase.
And so he has the PGA Tour around $10 billion pre money, meaning that's before the Saudis or SSG put in their seven combined. So if they put in 3.5 each, that means they'd each get around 21% of the ownership, leaving 58 for the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and PGA Tour players.
That makes more sense, right?
Yes, it does. Because I was under the impression it was like going to be like 30-ish.
Well, that's the way the Times article framed it.
Yeah. So it does. And I mean, how they divvy up that 58%, I think, is going to be very interesting. I think down the line, because I mean, the DP World Tour, their greatest assets probably the Ryder Cup,
definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking the Enterprise is probably gonna try to snag that from PJ of America.
Well, that's the thing, KP. Just get locked and loaded. We'll get to you here in a second. But Mark, the thing with this, we've heard the dollar amounts. We've heard who might be players. We don't really even know yet what they're valuing, right? So they discussed that the NewCo, this company that would be a for-profit entity, would house, quote, the assets. I guess they're figuring out what those assets are, because that's how you figure out what this valuation is, and where do the TV contracts come into play, and ticket sales and revenue from XYZ and everything. We don't really even know what's going in to NewCo.
Well, if you listen to Victor Hovland, he's like, the assets are the players.
Yeah.
And they're being treated like slaves right now. In many respects, it sort of smacks of the fact that back in the day when, you know, money was valued by the gold standard, you know, there was a gold value to printed money. Well, that's kind of gone out the window now, because people are printing money hand over fist. So you could make the value whatever you want it to be. And this I know for sure. SSG, fantastic. I wish Arthur Blank would use some of that money to find us a better coach in Atlanta for the Falcons. That would be awesome. But they're going to get blown out of the water by the Saudis. If the Saudis decide to do what they're capable of doing, you still can't compete, whether you bring $3 billion or $33 billion. What fun do they have, those Saudis over there? They could go bananas if they really wanted to. So that's my take. I mean, you guys know more about the finances. You spend time reading this. I'm just going to keep my head down and call golf when I'm up there. But I agree with you, Patrick. This is a play to say you thought you held all the leverage with Rahm. No, we got a little some over here. So when we sit down at the table, we're not going to be the pushovers that everyone's thinking we're going to be right now.
There's definitely, I think, a lot of that in it, KP, right? It's punch, counter punch. Also, I think that, you know, if you can get an investment, say it's $3 billion from SSG, $3 billion from the PIF, I think it makes it a little more tenable to people who say, okay, it's not the Saudis buying the PGA Tour, it's part of a larger investment group, et cetera, et cetera. There's that side of things. There is, I mean, yeah, the ride. I mean, there's just, it's, how do these assets end up changing? Will they only show commercials moving forward? Are they going to expect a return on this money? How were they ever going to make this money back? I got like a lot here.
Yeah. Here we go. Those are the real questions, because actually I've got a question for you, Rick. I just thought it was hypothetical. Would you rather own the four majors in the Ryder Cup? Like you have, like you have 100% equity in those enterprises, in those entities. Or so that's your
first. I'm almost always going to take option one, but I'm interested to hear what option two is.
That's option one, or whatever this ends up being. What do you call it, Patrick?
The Enterprise Starship. So it is the commercial operations of the PGA Tour, LIV Golf, and the DP World Tour.
Okay, so which of those would you rather own?
Do I get to run it, or do I? I'm just a. I just sit back and count my money one direction or the other.
No, you're not running it. You're just have ownership, and other people are running both, either of them.
Then the majors and the Ryder Cup.
For sure.
I think that was my answer anyway, but I do think that, listen, I mean, there is obviously a lot of value in the TV contracts, everything, the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour. If you want to go the LIV route and sell franchise, there is a ton of value in that. I just don't necessarily trust the people running any of that. So I'm going to say, I don't want to be a part of that. I'll take the four majors, which I know are always going to have value. The Ryder Cup is always going to have value and are seemingly immune from a lot of the crap going on around this.
And not only immune, but all maybe like benefit from, right?
Yes, sure.
And so I think that's the right answer. It's the answer I would choose. And I guess my point in saying that is it's such a, like, I think we keep talking about like, oh, what's the value of professional golf? What's the value of professional golf or men's professional golf? We're not talking about the value of men's professional golf because you're excluding the most valuable, like, part of all of this, right? You're talking about like the second most valuable thing in men's professional golf, which is like the regular season, right? It's the non-majors and Ryder Cup. And I just think, like, I get, and I wrote about this in my producer Josh, I think I wrote this in Normal Sport 3. It's like the NBA not owning the NBA finals and trying to just get you to care about the regular season. You're like, well, what? You know, like that. And so golf has some built-in just weirdness to it. But I wrote about this in my newsletter on Saturday. I get very wary when I hear private equity from multiple sources going towards something that is niche and not like the top of the industry. Right. Because like, what is that a good thing for me as a fan? It feels like no. Now, you know, I saw Dan Rappaport tweeted like, hey, money coming into our sport is always a good thing. Maybe like, I guess like I can understand like that viewpoint and like how you can get there. I just get wary about it, man. Like I don't know that this is all like a great thing. Now I don't know that the PGA Tour has any other options at this point. So I'm not like, saying that they should go in a different direction. I think they're like, this is kind of it, but it doesn't excite me. I don't know what I'm supposed to get excited about here.
Well, I just worry, Patrick, about, I mean, this is not a $6 or $7 billion donation. You know, what does this payback look like? Are we going to be in a perpetual commercial? I agree. I saw Dan's tweet as well. And for the most part, I'd be, oh, business is booming. This is great. You know, all this new money coming in. I think the fans have been catching consistent L's for 2 years and they will continue to catch L's. Everybody else might be fine. It might be great for everybody else. Fans are catching L's.
I think the first order of business will be more on the cost side, however, trying to cut costs. Because what revenue based off that Sportico article is 1.9, and then the costs were like 1.8.
I thought it was like 1.6.
All right, Patrick, you're in charge. What's the first most obvious cut?
Hey, stay away from the salaries for the announcers for PGA Tour.
Oh, Mark, those are going up.
Way down the list.
Come on. Yeah. Next question.
Seriously.
We're adding us three, too.
yeah, first, that budget's being increased.
Well, you got the legal cost. They bumped up $20 million. I don't want to touch on salaries since I already offended a friend of a friend of a program today. So they're out there. And I think you could look at, you know, some of these lower tier players, but I think
I was leading you to that answer.
I know. I'm not gonna touch on this. You guys can touch on this if you want. You can go.
Why are you not gonna?
I don't know. He's all of a sudden Patrick the gunslinger is gun shy. I don't know. But here's no. This is not like my opinion, right? This is Patrick's absolutely right that when private equity firms come in and they're going to want to cut costs, they are going to look at this and say, oh my gosh, there are tours that cost a ton to run that bring in almost zero revenue. And that's going to be the first place that they look. Now, that is not good for the growth and the future of the game. This is why when you have guys like Peter Malnati and you've got the 21 lower guys on the PGA Tour looking for transparency, they know that they're in a position where they're not holding a strong hand. And that's not right, Mark. Like, you need a system, you need the Korn Ferry, you need these other tours, but from a financial standpoint, they don't make any money.
Yeah, well, look, I had this conversation with a few folks that came and spent some time with us over the weekend, and the one young man is very into the sport. So he's kind of like you guys would be. I mean, I should hire him as my researcher because he was telling me more about Korn Ferry players than I knew. But the thing about all those tours that you say are likely to get the axe if this does indeed happen is they're just not driving numbers. I mean, the PGA Tour is broadcasting Q School finals this week, but they had the Golf Channel had cut the Korn Ferry Tour feed and the tour were producing the thing. So all of the big television, and that's, I can speak from the television point of view, they're interested in the big events with the big players because that's where they can sell the big dollar commercials. That's how the economy of it all works. But, you know, with love, PGA Tour Latino America or PGA Tour China or the McKenzie Tour or even the Korn Ferry Tour, they are just really not that attractive. And your point is well founded. They are necessary because they're a feeder system, but it's very much like, you know, the minor leagues in baseball, for argument's sake.
Well, correct.
Yeah. So it's I'm keen to see how the whole thing shakes out.
I believe it's a necessary service, KP. Yeah,
totally.
But that is not how people who are going to pry through the budget are going to look. You know, when you look at the United States Postal Service, how much money do they, quote, lose? Well, they're a service that is provided to citizens of the country, right? Like, so they're going to go through this budget with a fine tooth comb.
And when you're talking about, I can't believe we're talking about the USPS, but
come on, man. Those are my people out there.
I stand for the Postal Service. I love the Postal Service.
Shout out to everyone at La Enfant Plaza. Come on.
It's, I don't even know what you're talking about, but it's subsidized by other entities, right? Like that's how a lot of this works. I think, and this is where it gets, you know, I think the reality is, and this is what I wrote about on Saturday in my newsletter, Rick, is like, I think the tour experienced this weird boom in the Tiger era that everybody just presumes is going to continue because that's how businesses work. That's how large corporations work, is that the line is just always up and to the right. And the truth is, like, maybe Patrick Cantlay shouldn't be playing for $25 million. Right. And Liv has really blown that out of proportion to where there's no anchor to, like, there's no stability there. Everything's just like very sort of oversized. And so you've got this, you know, if Patrick Cantlay shouldn't be playing for $25 million, then maybe, you know, I'm trying, Scott Stallings shouldn't be playing for like $10 million. And that is, like, listen, easy for me to say. I'm not the one whose life that affects and whose job that affects or whatever. But, like, that might just be the reality, is that your business is only supposed to be this big. Now, we can talk about all the other stuff, teams and equity from that. There's a lot of different ways to generate revenue. But I'm afraid that Liv has really, what's the word I'm looking for? Disrupted all these numbers to the point that nobody knows, like, what reality should actually be. And maybe like those numbers should have shrunk a little bit in the post-Tiger era, or at least stayed the same. And instead they've like doubled, and you removed this generational player who kind of made the numbers what they were to begin with. And I think that's where, you know, there could be some cost cutting that happens. I don't know if you can do it. Like, I don't know if the players will stand for it. I don't even know what power the players are going to have in a for-profit entity.
That's a different subject. I will say this, because I've known a lot of the players who played in the Tiger era, and so they saw the boom, right? Because what was happening pre-Tiger to post-Tiger, it was mammoth, and it continued to grow, to your observation. The reality is a lot of the mature ones back then kind of knew this thing was going to reach its boiling point, which it now has, and Tiger's sort of beyond his sell-by, although he still moves the numbers like we saw this weekend.
For sure.
So there's that. But I'm completely with you. With this influx of money, the players have become too powerful, almost, if there's such a thing. And they're like, no, we're not going to play if we don't get X. And if the players decide they're not going to play, or they're going to embargo an event or whatever the case might be, I don't care how much money you got in there, you don't have competition. So therein lies the conundrum for the leadership. So I'm keen to see that, how that whole sort of very narrow road is going to be navigated. Because we talk about the blue chips and stuff. If they decide that's it, we're done, then you've got a Korn Ferry Tour that's being played on the PGA Tour kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Yes. Well, Mark's right. Real quick, Patrick, like in other sports, this works. Like you have two sides, you have negotiations for what's it called? What's the word I'm looking for, Rick?
Collective bargaining agreement.
Yes. You have an agreement for a set period of time, and you just kind of roll by that. In this instance, and this is where it gets, Victor Hovland was talking about how like, well, management has been terrible. And I don't necessarily like disagree that the PGA Tour is not, you know, their communication's been pretty bad. Like they've made a ton of missteps, but if the alternative is letting golfers run the business, like that's not better, you know, like it might sound better for them in the short run, but it's not better for your business and for your product and for your fans in the long run. So I don't know. I'm with you, Mark. Like I don't know how they sort of break this power dynamic that's going on right now till we get to the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, it's kind of like you've got to have the dot-com bubble burst, you know. But to me, the toothpaste's out of the tube now, and you're not getting it back in. You're just not getting it back in. It's going to have to take a mindset where whoever it is, the players, the pack or someone like that, just goes, all right, folks, we've got to settle down a little bit now. We're going to balance off the purses where they are, because look, we've lost a title sponsor of a big event just because the demand was so high for the purse for a signature event.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, that is a big deal. And so this is where the players got to go, perhaps we just got to settle down a little bit with our demands here, because not every single one of us is going to get a few $100 million just because we hit a white ball around the place.
Well, that's what the piece of the pie is for. That's what the equity is for.
But here's what I want to ask you, though. Everyone's talking like John Rahm's going and he's going to have his own team and stuff. Let's be honest with you. I'm out in the teams. Are we really going to go? Am I really going to go buy a Stingers hoodie and a hat?
I mean, look what you're wearing right now, Mark. You might.
Okay, well, bad example. No, but I'm like, how much leverage and how much money is there actually in the stuff? Yes, you can project. But if I'm Mr. Titleist, I'm like, well, dang, I'm going to have the crushes. Big deal, man. I can just get Bryson. Why do I have to sponsor the team? Yes.
I agree with that, but I meant like equity in the PGA Tour enterprise, where these guys now have, you know, a reason to, you know, be more cost effective, pretty much, because it does affect their bottom line now, because they're involved, they're stakeholders.
Yeah. Okay.
I wonder if we'll ever have a players union. I know these guys love their independence and their independent contractors, but there is kind of a reason why that works in other sports, so that you don't, like you said, KP, I mean, you don't negotiating in a bubble. There is no negotiation. It's craziness. And I think a union and two sides that work together transparently to figure stuff out could be interesting.
I think that's what it's trending toward, especially with the Starship. I can't even say it. Is it Starship Enterprise, Patrick?
Enterprise Starship.
Enterprise Starship.
Star Trek. Come on.
I was homeschooled. I think that's what it's trending toward, because you can't have, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what the makeup of the organization is going to look like, but I presume it's not going to be member run anymore. Like this whole thing where they're going to have like the Enterprise running both LIV and the PGA Tour, and you'll still have members that like, what are we doing? Like, blow the whole thing up, start it over from scratch, make it make sense, and let's move on. You know, I think there's a real opportunity to do that right now. And I, as messy as the road to get here has been, I hope they take advantage of it.
Let's move on. That is what we will use to go to our next break, but we still have Victor Hovland. We still have a little bit of Tony Finau. We've got a couple more things to chat about, but first we're going to pay the bills.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. Obviously, with Jon Rahm joining LIV, there were questions about who he might take with him. Names were floated around. Tony Finau, Victor Hovland, Terrell Hatton, amongst others. Well, Finau has posted on Instagram that he is, I guess, at least for now, here to stay on the PGA Tour. We'll be teeing it up at the Century. And then Victor Hovland went on the Four podcast in Norway and had some things to say about his view on the game of golf. This has been translated from Norwegian, so it might not, you know, the words mean the same, but some of it seems pretty direct compared to what Victor usually sounds like. But the quotes we're looking for here, I doubt it, about if you will see him go to LIV Golf. He would go on to say here, Patrick, he wasn't really that shocked to see Jon Rahm leave, and he criticized the PGA Tour management. He said, let's see here. There's a lot of different parts happening at the same time. Just to be clear, I'm not complaining about the position I'm in. I'm very grateful for everything, but the management has not done a good job. They almost see the players as labor and not as part of the members. After all, we are the PGA Tour. Without the players, there is nothing.
Yeah, I think we all agree. Everything changed after June 6th and Jay Monahan pulling Trent Williams as the lead blocker and allowing these guys to accept the money after, you know, coming down from the moral high ground, that, you know, slant he was doing for the past year. And so I think if you're a major champion, that's been LIV Golf's playbook, attack the recent major champions, it makes a ton of sense, right? You're in the last 20 or next 20. You probably think by that point, OWGR will come around, or this deal with the PGA Tour will come around, and you're going to get OWGR points one way or another. So it makes sense for Jon Rahm to go. I thought the Tony Finau smoke was very real. Victor was something, you know, I didn't really hear a lot of, and for him to kind of say no is great for the PGA Tour, considering that's their FedEx Cup champion. It would have been their player of the year and the FedEx Cup champion going over to LIV in a couple weeks. That would have been tough. But yeah, I think Victor just, I mean, he made a lot of sense.
Can we just admit for a minute that, let's say, Rahm did get Finau and Hovland and Hatton on his team, that the whole LIV concept of team competition throughout the year would be a moot point, because it wouldn't be competition at all. I mean, good golly, they're going to just dust everyone week in and week out.
Hatton would be the best player in the league and the worst player on the team.
Yeah, that's what I know for certain. Well, because look, for a long time, there were Rahm overtures going on. We all knew about it. He's close with Sergio. They'd been working on him for a long time, but Rahm appeared resolute. He really did. And if there's an individual who's got just enough of that screw you mindset, Rahm was going to be the guy to tell Liv, go away. But when he didn't, that to me showed that all bets are off, man. It is open season. It's like the NCAA transfer portal. These guys, there's no guarantee. I don't care what they say on the Instagram, and they might play in the first few events. There's money coming, and there's big money coming. So right now, whereas I was quite confident in the future for a while, it's a little bleak right now, to be honest with you, from my point of view.
Yeah, Rick, I'm out of the prediction game, KP. I just,
same. Yeah. My question for you is how bad do you have to be for Victor Hovland to be mad at you?
Very. Yeah.
Right?
Very bad. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, he would say there's a couple more quotes here I didn't even get to. Like, when you get to see what happens behind closed doors, how the management actually make decisions which are not in the player's best interest, but best for themselves and what they think is best, they are the businessmen who say that. There's a great deal of arrogance behind it all.
Which, again, I mentioned this earlier. I don't disagree with Hovland in the micro sense. Like, I don't think the tour has been, I don't know that anybody thinks the tour has been great over the last 2 years. However, I disagree with him in the macro sense in that I don't want athletes also being executives, right? Like, that's the way the PGA Tour is structured, but I don't think it should be structured that way.
Right. I agree. I think that they should have representation. And I guess the argument would be, well, the representation is Tiger and Cantlay and Spieth and these guys who are on the board. But I at this point, I'm not, what does the board have any power? I mean, if Jay can just go, I don't even know who's in control of anything.
Dude, they unanimously voted for the SSG and to advance conversations with the Saudi Public Investment Fund. You didn't get that press release, Rick?
You think they sent press releases?
I want to
toss this at you and get your take. I've said this for a long, long time. I have the suspicion that LIV will be a global tour, the international tour, and the PGA Tour will be made up of basically Americans. And that's what it's going to be in the future if it continues to shake out this way. Because the international folks, they've got to move over here, they uproot, they basically move away from their culture because the PGA Tour was the place you wanted to be. It's why I moved to the United States. But heck, if I could live in South Africa, you know, travel to a few international countries a year and make millions of dollars, I'd do that in the blink of an eye. That's what John Rahm's saying about growing the game in Spain, as much as what that sounds a bit asinine. He will be more in touch with his fans because he'll probably spend a bit more time over there. More that being said, I don't know with his wife, Kelly, but that's what it's going to be to me. I think LIV will be international if we have this conversation in a few years' time. I really do.
The PGA Tour will be Americans and Rory.
Are you sure about Rory?
Are
you sure about Rory?
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know.
Well, I am. I mean, the guy's got hundreds of millions of dollars anyway. But right now, remember, these guys are all alpha males. And when they walk in a room, it's like someone's got to be the best or the smartest. And they compare by resume and bank accounts. And right now, Rahm seems to be the alpha. Scotty doesn't care. Scotty's like, I got enough money and majors and stuff. Rory kind of likes to be the alpha guy too.
Sounds like a bunch of guys who went to Duke.
I think what Mark is essentially describing is the European Tour PGA Tour dynamic of the 1980s, yeah, right? Or the early 1990s, I guess. And now I think that
Wisdom and Felder and Seve and Langer and all those European studs playing over there. Yep.
And I think the difference now is that, well, I don't, one, travel's easier, and so there's not this sort of difficulty in playing for like the top tour with the most money. And you could see a disparity in how much money is paid out if more and more guys go to like toward LIV, then the PGA Tour would start to have to reduce its purses. And you would, I just don't know that you're ever going to have like that separation, you know, because I don't think that like I said, travel is just not as much of an issue now as it was in the 1970s or 80s. It's not as difficult to kind of get to different places, especially if that much money is being paid.
Okay. Well, I'm sure by this time next, hopefully can these guys keep, you know, without breaking news until like the 26th, that'd be really great if we could do that. Patrick, go on the record and tell us that when we see Tiger Woods in January or February or whatever, what apparel is he wearing?
Ooh, saving the biggest question for last. I think the TaylorMade TW line's probably coming out here soon, right?
Yeah. Tiger owns like the TW trademark, yeah, right?
Yes.
So you slap that on anything, nobody cares. Yeah. The TaylorMade, which I guess used to be, is it still Adidas? Wasn't that the?
It got bought. I don't know. I think probably the same private equity that's trying to get in golf but owns it now.
So he's not wearing Travis Matthew with you, is he, Rick?
I hope not, because
they don't make a red enough shirt. So all their shirt is kind of like an off red color. They need real red.
Yeah. They should just turn the M upside down. Maybe that's what TaylorMade will do. TMTW.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Easy game. If they make room for Tiger, they're definitely kicking me out. So hopefully Tiger stays away.
I thought Grayson would be a pretty, it would make sense, but it does. I'm with you. It does seem like TaylorMade.
It just doesn't make sense to not. Well, the TaylorMade stuff is so easy, but also it's like, just have the Tiger Woods brand, right? Like he can do anything he wants, right? He has the money. No, he has resources. He doesn't need an apparel company. He can start an apparel company tomorrow.
Yeah. I think I'm into like Tiger's apparel because it's Nike. I don't know that I'm into it because it's Tiger. That's like a half-baked thought. Like if LeBron started his own shoe company, maybe, I guess, I don't know.
Well, Michael Jordan did it pretty well because his line is now Jordan. It's not Nike Jordan.
Yeah,
I think Tiger just gets anything. He could buy his own company. I mean, the guy's got how much? And he'd probably blow every apparel company out of the water if he just markets that thing.
What if? Yeah.
Jordan's still affiliated with him.
Yeah. Are they still under Nike?
Well, no, they're separate. Mark's right. They're separate, but it was very much like a – it would be like if Tiger – just broke off into like Tiger Woods,
yeah,
but as
the swoosh on the stuff, yeah.
Like part of night, yeah, like just replace the swoosh with TW or whatever.
I think it's, yeah, TaylorMade, but it'll just be the TW logo and they'll make about $1 billion and everybody will be happy.
I wonder if he'll make his own shoes. That'll be interesting. Amazing. Been a lot of shoe talk lately with Tiger Woods.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? Because he's been wearing FootJoy ever since the accident. Nike didn't say a word, so obviously they were like, no, we've invested enough money in this stuff. We don't want to do that right now.
That's incredible.
It is incredible. For that to be the line, which is like, okay, the thing that everyone is going to care about is what he is wearing on his shoes, and they're going to show it a billion times. We're either incapable of or unwilling to make a shoe.
They should just buy FootJoy.
Tiger could buy FootJoy with his
banter, yeah.
I wouldn't with his couch cushion change.
There's Tiger with a big FootJoy logo in his collar.
Just bring a lot of mock turtlenecks back and fly off the shelves.
Isn't that gonna be weird though? Not seeing, I mean, like that's gonna be jarring.
I don't think it's gonna be as jarring as you think it is. I think it's gonna be the same exact, like he's gonna wear the same colors, right? Which it's just not going to, instead of a Nike swoosh, it's just going to be the TW logo in white. I don't think it's going to be as jarring. Well,
Kyle, unless I'm crazy, because I don't know the ins and outs of his deal, but if you see Tiger on Thursday, Fridays at PGA Tour events, he didn't ever have the swoosh on him. It was always his logo. And then the swoosh came over the weekends.
Are you talking about hat or shirt?
Everything.
I think he always had swoosh on his shirt.
On the weekends, he did. Not on Thursday, Friday.
He at majors, he wears the swoosh. And then PGA Tour events, he gets the TW on the hat.
I've never noticed that. And I love that that was a negotiation at some point. Yeah. Well, at Masters, we'll give you swooshes all 4 days. PGA Tour events, I'm going T-dub. I love that many people probably sat down and discussed that.
Mm, yeah.
multiple times.
Yeah.
Well, you've seen that Jordan flick about how his mom negotiated the royalties on the shoes, right? Now that worked out for him.
Yeah, that worked out.
Yeah, pretty well.
That's pretty sick. All right. We will be back on Wednesday, Patrick, and you will be putting that trophy emoji on the line. The official trivia competition will happen Wednesday. Are you nervous?
Yeah, I am. I've got an ice machine cooking behind me. Hopefully no one can hear it. Yeah, I'm pretty nervous, especially after Kyle and I kind of went, you know, Watson, Nicholas, Turnberry back there a couple weeks ago in the final round.
Did we?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we did.
Back and
we
forth,
did.
Back and forth. I still hear Emiliano Grillo in my sleep.
Mark might not have seen that. We did. We had to do one. Was it one-time major winners?
No, we did that. That was previous.
Runner-up in majors since 2000.
Major runner-up.
Oh, no. Gee, what is that?
We went.
You guys are deep fans.
We went like 50 deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody, but nobody remembers the second place guy. I mean, how do you guys know this stuff?
They do.
I have a lot of Wikipedia.
Yeah. I got another. You don't want to know, Mark. You do not want to know what's going on inside this brain. But yeah, I'm definitely nervous. But people forget, you know, who won the Open following Watson's Open? Jack Nicklaus. So hopefully that happens this time around.
Okay, we'll see you guys. I've been
reading Wikipedia. If you can't tell,
I still got to come up with the questions. So don't get too deep in there. All right. Big thanks, producer Josh, for all the hard work behind the scenes. Mark Immelman, very festive at Mark_Immelman. Patrick McDonald at P McDonald CBS does not roll off the tongue. Kyle Porter CBS. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.